Chapter 19. The Law. Getting the sitters to their mounts proved no bother. They were as eager to be away as Egwene, especially Romanda and Lilaine, both cold as the wind and with eyes like thunderclouds. The rest were the very image of cool-eyed Aes Sedai serenity, giving off composure like a heavy scent, yet they glided to their horses so quickly that the nobles were left gaping, and the brightly clad servants scrambled in loading the pack horses to catch up as best they could. Egwene had Dyshar set a hard pace in the snow, and with no more than a look and a nod from her, Lord Bryn made sure the armored escorts moved as fast. Swan on Bella and Shiriam on Wing rushed to join her. For long stretches they churned through fetlock deep cover, the horses stepping high at near to a trot, the flame of Tarvalen rippling in the icy breeze, and even when it was necessary to slow, when the horses were sinking knee-deep through the snow crust, they kept to a fast walk. The sitters had no choice except to keep up, and their speed cut down their opportunity to talk on the way. At that tiring pace, a lack of attention to your horse could bring a broken leg for the animal and a broken neck for you. Even so, Romanda and Lilaine each managed to gather her coterie around her, and those two knots floundered through the snow surrounded by wards against eavesdropping. The pair seemed to be delivering tirades. Egwene could imagine the topic. For that matter, other sitters managed to ride together for a time, exchanging a few words quietly and casting cool glances sometimes at her and sometimes at the sisters wrapped around by Sidar. Only Delana never joined one of those brief conversations. She stayed close beside Halima, who at last admitted that she was cold. Face tight, the countrywoman held her cloak close around her, but she still tried to comfort Delana, whispering to her almost constantly. Delana seemed to need comforting. Her brows were drawn down, putting a crease in her forehead that actually made her seem aged. She was not the only one worried. The others masked the feeling rigidly, radiating absolute poise, but the warders rode like men expecting the worst to leap out of the snow at the next step, eyes shifting in an unceasing watch, disquieting cloaks streaming in the wind to leave hands free. When an Aes Sedai worried, her warder worried, and the sitters were too absorbed to think of calming the men. Egwene was just as glad to see it. If the sitters were troubled, they had not yet made up their minds. When Bryn rode out to confer with Uno, she took the opportunity to ask what the two women had learned about Aes Sedai and tower guards in Andor. "Not much," Swan replied in a tight voice. Shaggy Bella did not seem to be having any difficulty with the pace, but Swan did, gripping her reins tightly in one hand and the pommel of her saddle with the other. "As near as I can make out, there are 50 rumors and no facts. It's a likely sort of tale to spring up, but it might still be true." Bella lurched, her front hooves sinking deep, and Swan gasped, "The light burn all horses!" Shiriam had learned no more. She shook her head and sighed irritably. "It sounds all feathers and nonsense to me, Mother. There are always rumors of sisters sneaking about." "Didn't you ever learn to ride, Swan?" she added, her voice suddenly dripping derision. "By tonight you'll be too sore to walk." Shiriam's nerves must have been ragged for her to burst out so openly. From the way she kept shifting in her saddle, she had already achieved her prediction for Swan. Swan's eyes hardened, and she opened her mouth, already half snarling, never mind who was watching from behind the banner. "Be still, both of you," Egwene snapped. She took a deep, calming breath. She was a bit ragged herself. Whatever Arathel believed, any force Elida sent to interfere with them would be too large for sneaking. That left the Black Tower, a disaster in the making. You got further plucking the chicken in front of you than trying to start on one up a tree, especially when the tree was in another country and there might not even be another chicken. Still, she bit off her words in giving Shiriam instructions for once they reached the camp. She was the Ammerlin seat, and that meant all Aes Sedai were her responsibility, even those following Elida. Her voice was rock steady, though. It was too late to be frightened once you grabbed the wolf by the ears. Shiriam's tilted eyes went wide at the orders. "Mother, if I may ask, why—" She trailed off under Egwene's level gaze and swallowed. "It will be as you say, Mother," she said slowly. Strange. I remember the day you and Nynaeve came to the tower. Two girls who couldn't decide whether to be excited or frightened. So much has changed since then. Everything. Nothing stays the same forever, Egwene told her. She gave Swan a significant look, but Swan refused to see. She appeared to be sulking. Shiryam looked sick. Lord Bryn returned then, and he must have sensed the mood among them. Aside from saying that they were making good time, he kept his mouth shut. A wise man. Making good time or not, the sun was sitting almost on the treetops when they finally rode through the army's sprawling camp. Wagons and tents cast long shadows across the snow, and a number of men were hard at work building yet more low shelters out of brush. There were not nearly enough tents, even for all the soldiers, and the camp held almost as many harness makers and laundresses and fletchers and the like, all those who inevitably followed any army. The ringing of anvils spoke of farriers and armorers and blacksmiths still at their labors. Cook fires were burning everywhere, and the cavalry peeled away, eager for warmth and hot food, as soon as their wearily plodding animals were cared for. Surprisingly, Bryn rode on at Egwene's side after she dismissed him. "If you will allow, mother," he said, "I thought I might accompany you a while longer." Shiryam actually twisted in her saddle to stare in astonishment. Swan stared too, straight ahead, as if not daring to turn her suddenly wide eyes toward him. What did he think he could do? Act as her bodyguard? Against sisters? That fellow with the drippy nose would do as well. Reveal just how completely he was on her side? Tomorrow was time enough for that, if all went well tonight. That revelation now might easily stampede the hall in directions she hardly dared contemplate. "Tonight is for Aes Sedai business," she told him firmly. But silly as the suggestion was, he had offered to put himself at risk for her. There was no telling his reasons. Who knew why a man did anything? Yet she owed him for that, among other things. "Unless I send Swan to you tonight, Lord Bryn, you should leave before morning. If blame for today attaches itself to me, it might reflect on you, too. Staying could prove dangerous, even fatal. I don't think they would need much excuse. No need to name who they were." "I gave my word," he replied quietly, patting Traveler's neck, "to Tar Valon." Pausing, he glanced toward Swan. It was less a hesitation than a consideration. "Whatever tonight's business is," he said finally, "remember that you have 30,000 men and Gareth Bryn behind you. That should count for something even among Aes Sedai. Until tomorrow, mother." Reining his big-nosed bay around, he called over his shoulder, "I expect to see you tomorrow too, Swan. Nothing changes that." Swan stared at his back as he rode away. There was anguish in her eyes. Egwene could not help staring, too. He had never been so open before, not nearly. Why now, of all times? Crossing the 40 or 50 paces that separated the army's camp from the Aes Sedai's, she nodded to Shiryam, who drew rein at the first tents. She and Swan rode on. Behind them, Shiryam's voice rose, surprisingly clear and steady. "The Ammerlin seat calls the hall to sit this day in formal session. Let preparations be made with all speed." Egwene did not look back. At her tent, a bony groom, kicking her layered woolen skirts, came running to take Dyshar and Bella. Her face was pinched, and she barely ducked her head before hurrying away with the horses as quickly as she had come. The warmth of the glowing braziers inside was like a fist closing down. Egwene had not realized how cold it was outside until then, or how cold she was. Chesa took her cloak and exclaimed when she felt her hands, "Why, you're ice to the bone, mother." Chattering away, she bustled around, folding Egwene's cloak and Swan's, smoothing the neatly turned down blankets on Egwene's cot, touching a tray set on one of the chests that had been pulled down from the stack. "I'd jump right into bed with hot bricks all around if I was that chilled, as soon as I'd eaten, anyway. Warm outside does only so much good without warm inside. I'll fetch a few extra bricks to tuck under your feet while you sup. And for Swan, said I, of course. Oh, if I was as hungry as you must be, I know I'd be tempted to gulp my food, but that always gives me pains in the stomach. Pausing by the tray, she eyed Egwene, and nodded with satisfaction when she said that she would not eat too fast. Making a sober answer was not easy. Chaser was always refreshing, but after today, Egwene almost laughed with pleasure. There were no complications to Chaser. Two white bowls of lentil stew stood on the tray, along with a tall pitcher of spiced wine, two silver cups, and two large rolls. Somehow the woman had known Swan would be eating with her. Steam rose from the bowls and pitcher. How often had Chaser had to change that tray to make sure warm food greeted Egwene straight away? Simple and uncomplicated, and as caring as a mother or a friend. "I must forego bed for now, Chaser. I've work yet tonight. Would you leave us?" Swan shook her head as the tent flap fell behind the plump woman. "Are you sure she hasn't been in your service since you were a babe?" she muttered. Taking one of the bowls, a roll, and a spoon, Egwene settled into her chair with a sigh. She also embraced the source and warded the tent against listeners. Unfortunately, Sidar made her all that much more aware of half-frozen hands and feet. The bits in between were not much warmer. The bowl seemed almost too warm to handle, and the roll as well. Oh, how she would have loved to have those hot bricks! "Is there anything more we can do?" she asked, and promptly gulped down a spoonful of stew. She was ravenous, and no wonder, with nothing since breakfast and that early. Lentils and woody carrots tasted like her mother's finest cooking. "I can't think of anything, but can you?" "Whatever can be done has been. There isn't anything else, short of the Creator putting a hand in." Swan took the other bowl and dropped onto the low stool, but then she sat staring into her stew and stirring it with her spoon. "You wouldn't really tell him, would you?" she said finally.
"I couldn't bear if he knew."
"Why on earth not?"
"He'd take advantage,"
Swan said darkly.
"Oh, not that. I don't think that."
She was quite prudish in some areas. "But the man would make my life the pit of doom." "And washing his small clothes and polishing his boots and his saddle every day was not?" Egwene sighed. How could such a sensible, intelligent, capable woman turn into a scatterbrain over this one subject? Like a hissing viper, an image rose in her head. Herself, sitting on Gawain's knee, playing kissing games. In a tavern! She shoved it away hard. "Swan, I need your experience. I need your brain. I can't afford to have you half-witted because of Lord Bryn. If you can't pull yourself together, I'll pay him what you owe and forbid you to see him. I will."
"I said I'd work off the debt," Swan said stubbornly. "I have as much honor as Lord Gareth Bloody Bryn, as much and more. He keeps his word and I keep mine. Besides, Min told me I have to stay close to him or we'll both die, or something like that."
A pinkness in her cheeks gave her away, though. Her honor and Min's viewing notwithstanding, she was simply willing to put up with anything to be near the man. "Very well. You're besotted, and if I tell you to stay away from him, you'll either disobey or mope and wrap the rest of your brains in a cloud. What are you going to do about him?" Scowling indignantly, Swan went on for some little time, growling what she would like to do about Gareth Bloody Bryn. He would have enjoyed none of it. Some he might not have survived. "Swan," Egwene said warningly, "you deny one more time what's plain as your nose, and I'll tell him and give him the money." Swan pouted sullenly. She pouted. Sullenly. Swan!
"I don't have time to be in love. I barely have time to think between working for you and him, and even if everything goes right tonight, I'll have twice as much to do. Besides," her face fell and she shifted on the stool. "What if he doesn't return my feelings?" she muttered. "He's never even tried to kiss me. All he cares about is whether his shirts are clean."
Egwene scraped her spoon through her bowl and was surprised when it came up empty. Nothing remained of the roll but a few crumbs on her dress. Light! Her middle still felt hollow. She eyed Swan's bowl hopefully.
The woman seemed to have little interest in anything but drawing circles in the lentils. A sudden thought occurred to her. Why had Lord Bryn insisted that Swan work off her debt even after learning who she was? Just because she had said she would? It was a preposterous arrangement. Except that it did keep her close to him when nothing else would have. For that matter, she herself had often wondered why Bryn had agreed to build the army. He had to have known there was a very good chance he was laying his head on the chopping block. And why he had offered that army to her, a girl Amyrlin with no real authority and not a friend among the sisters except Swan, as far as he knew. Could the answer to all of these questions be as simple as, he loved Swan? No. Most men were frivolous and flighty, but that was truly preposterous. Still, she offered the suggestion, if only to amuse Swan. It might cheer her a little. Swan snorted in disbelief. It sounded odd coming from that pretty face, but no one could put quite so much expression into a snort as she did. He's not a total idiot, she said dryly. In fact, he has a good head on his shoulders. He thinks like a woman most of the time. I still haven't heard you say you'll straighten up, Swan, Egwene persisted. You have to, one way or another. Well, of course I will. I don't know what's been the matter with me. It isn't as if I never kissed a man before. Her eyes narrowed suddenly, as if she expected Egwene to challenge her on that. I haven't spent my whole life in the tower. This is ridiculous. Chattering about men tonight of all nights. Peering into her bowl, she seemed to realize for the first time that it held food. She filled her spoon, gesturing with it at Egwene. You have to be careful of your timing, more now than ever. If Romanda or Lelaine grabs the tiller, you'll never get your hands on it. Ridiculous or not, something certainly had restored Swan's appetite. She went through her stew faster than Egwene had hers, and not a crumb of the roll escaped her. Egwene found that she had drawn her fingers through her own empty bowl. There was nothing for it then but to lick off the last few lentils, of course. Discussing what was to happen tonight served no real point. They had honed and refined what Egwene was to say and when so many times that she was surprised she had not dreamed of it. She certainly could have done her part in her sleep. Swan insisted anyway, skirting very near the point where Egwene would have to call her down, going over it again and again, bringing up possibilities they had discussed before 100 times. Strangely, Swan had found herself a very good mood. She even essayed a little humor, unusual for her of late, though some was on the gallows side. "You know, Romanda wanted to be Amyrlin herself once," she said at one point. "I've heard it was Tamra getting the stolen staff that made her stalk off into retirement like a gull with her tail feathers clipped. I'll lay a silver mark I don't have to a fish scale that her eyes bulge twice as much as Lelaine's. And later, I wish I could be there to hear them howl. Somebody's going to before much longer, and I'd rather it was them than us. I never had the voice for singing." She actually sang a little snatch about staring across the river at a boy and having no boat. She was right. Her voice was pleasant in its fashion, but she could not carry a tune in a bucket. And later still, "A good thing I have such a sweet face now. If this goes badly, they'll dress the pair of us for dolls and sit us on a shelf to admire. Of course we might have accidents instead. Dolls do get broken. Gareth Bryn will have to find someone else to bully." She really laughed at that. Egwene felt considerable relief when the tent flap bulged inward briefly, announcing someone who knew enough not to enter where there was a ward. She really did not want to hear where Swan's humor went from there. As soon as she released the ward, Shiriam stepped inside, accompanied by a rush of air that seemed 10 times as cold as earlier. "It's time, Mother. Everything is ready." Her tilted eyes were wide, and she licked her lips with the tip of her tongue. Swan bounded to her feet and seized her cloak from Egwene's cot, but she paused in the act of draping it on her shoulders. "I have sailed the fingers of the dragon in the dark, you know," she said seriously, "and netted a lionfish once with my father. It can be done." Shiriam frowned as Swan darted out, letting in more cold. "Sometimes I think," she began, but whatever she sometimes thought she did not share. "Why are you doing this, mother?" she asked instead. "All of it. Today at the lake, calling the hall tonight. Why did you have us spend all day yesterday talking about Loghain to everybody we met? I'd think you might share it with me. I am your keeper. I did swear fealty." "I tell you what you need to know," Egwene said, swinging her cloak around her shoulders. There was no need to say that she trusted a forced oath only so far, even a sister's. And Shiriam might find a reason to let a word slip into the wrong ear, despite that oath. After all, Aes Sedai were noted for finding loopholes in what they had said. She did not really believe that would happen, but just as with Lord Bryn, she could not take even small chances unless she had to. "I have to tell you," Shiriam said bitterly, "I think tomorrow Romanda or Lelaine will be your keeper of the Chronicles, and I'll be serving a penance for not warning the hall, and I think you might envy me." Egwene nodded. "All too possible. Shall we go?" The sun made a red dome on the treetops to the west, and a lurid light shone off the snow. Servants marked Egwene's passage along the deep paths with silent bows and curtsies. Their faces were troubled or else blank. Servants could pick up the moods of those they served almost as quickly as warders. Not a sister was to be seen at first, and then they all were, in a great gathering 3 deep around a pavilion set up in the only open space in the camp large enough, the area used by sisters skimming to the dovecotes in Saladar and traveling back with reports from the eyes and ears. A large, much-mended piece of heavy canvas, not a patch on the splendor of the canopy at the lake, it had been a great deal of effort to set up. Most often in the past 2 months the hall had convened much as they had yesterday morning, or perhaps squeezed into one of the larger tents. The pavilion had been erected only twice since leaving Saladar, both times for a trial. Noticing Egwene and Shiriam's approach, sisters in the back murmured to those ahead, and a gap opened to let them through. Expressionless eyes watched the pair of them, giving not a clue to whether the watching sisters knew or even suspected what was happening. Not a clue to what they thought. Butterflies stirred in Egwene's stomach. A rosebud. Calm. She stepped onto the layered carpets, woven in bright flowers and a dozen different patterns, and moved through the ring of braziers set up around the canopy's rim, and Shiriam began. "She comes! She comes!" If she sounded a little less grand than usual, a touch nervous, it was small wonder. The polished benches and cloth-covered boxes from the lake were in use again. They made a much more formal sight than the mismatched gaggle of chairs that had been used previously. 2 slanting lines of 9 grouped by 3s, green, gray, and yellow to one side, white, brown, and blue to the other. At the wide end, farthest from Egwene, stood the striped box and bench for the Ammerlin seat. Sitting there, she would be the focus of every eye, very much aware that she was 1 facing 18. As well, she had not changed her clothes. Every sitter still wore her finery from the lake, only adding her shawl. A rosebud. Calm. One of the benches was empty, though only for a moment longer. Delana came rushing in just as Shiriam finished her litany. Looking breathless and flustered, the gray sitter scrambled up to her seat, between Varalyn and Quamesa, with little of her usual grace. She wore a sickly grin and toyed nervously with the fire drops around her neck. Anyone might have thought she was the one on trial. Calm. No one was on trial. Yet. Egwene started slowly across the carpets between 2 rows, with Shiriam close behind, and Quamesa stood. The light of Saidar suddenly shone around the dark, slender woman, youngest of the sitters. Tonight there would be no skimping of the formalities. "What is brought before the Hall of the Tower is for the Hall alone to consider," Quamesa announced. "Whosoever intrudes unbidden, woman or man, initiate or outsider, whether they come in peace or in anger, I will bind according to the law, to face the law. Know that what I speak is true, it will and shall be done." That formula was older than the oath against speaking untruth, from a time when almost as many Ammerlins died by assassination as by all other causes put together. Egwene continued her measured tread. It was an effort not to touch her stole for a reminder. She tried to concentrate on the bench ahead. Kwamesa resumed her seat, still shining with the power, and among the whites, Aeldrin rose, the glow surrounding her as well. With her dark golden hair and big, pale brown eyes, she was quite lovely when she smiled, but tonight a stone had more expression than she. "There are those within earshot who are not of the hall," she said in a cool voice strong with the accents of Tarabon. "What is spoken in the hall of the tower is for the hall alone to hear, until and unless the hall decides otherwise. I will make us private. I will seal our words to our ears only." Weaving a ward that walled the entire pavilion, she sat. There was a stir among the sisters outside, who now must watch the hall move in utter silence. Strange that so much among sitters depended on age, when distinction by age was next to anathema among the rest of Aes Sedai. Could Swan have seen a pattern in the sitters' ages? No. Focus. Calm and focus. Gripping the edges of her cloak, Egwene stepped up onto the brightly striped box and turned. Lilaine was already on her feet, blue-fringed shawl looped across her arms, and Romanda was rising without even waiting for Egwene to sit. She dared not let either seize the tiller. "I call a question before the hall," she said in a loud, firm voice. "Who will stand to declare war against the usurper Elida d'Avrinia Royhan?" And then she sat, throwing off her cloak and letting it fall across the bench. Standing beside her on the carpets, Shiriam appeared quite cool and collected, but she made a small sound, almost a whimper. Egwene did not think anyone else had heard. She hoped not. There was a brief moment of shock, women frozen on their seats, staring at her in amazement. Perhaps as much because she had asked at all as what she had asked. No one put a question before the hall before sounding out the sitters. It just was not done, for practical reasons as much as tradition. At last Lilaine spoke. "We do not declare war on individuals," she said in a dry voice. "Not even on traitors like Elida. In any case, I call to shelve your question while we deal with more immediate matters." She had had time to gather herself since the ride back. Her face was merely hard now, not thunderous. Brushing blue-slashed skirts as if brushing away Elida, or perhaps Egwene, she turned her attention to the other sitters. "What brings us to sit tonight is, I was about to say simple, but it isn't. Open the novice book? We would have grandmothers clamoring to be tested. Remain here a month? I hardly need list the difficulties, beginning with spending half our gold without coming a foot nearer Tarvalen. And as for not crossing into Andor, my sister Lilaine, in her anxiety, has forgotten who has the right to speak first," Romanda cut in smoothly. Her smile managed to make Lilaine appear merry. Still, she took her time adjusting her shawl just as she wanted, a woman with all the time in the world. "I have two questions to call before the hall, and in the second I will address Lilaine's concerns. Unfortunately for her, my first question concerns Lilaine's own fitness to continue in the hall." Her smile widened without growing the slightest bit warmer. Lilaine sat slowly, her scowl quite open. "A question of war cannot be shelved," Egwene said in a carrying tone. "It must be answered before any question called after it. That is the law." Quick questioning glances passed between sitters. "Is that so?" Janya said finally. Squinting thoughtfully, she twisted on her bench to address the woman next to her. "Takima, you remember everything you read, and I'm sure I remember you saying you had read the Law of War. Is that what it says?" Egwene held her breath. The White Tower had sent soldiers to any number of wars over the last 1,000 years, but always in response to a plea for help from at least 2 thrones, and it always had been their war, not the Tower's. The last time the Tower itself actually declared war had been against Arthur Hawkwing. Swan said that now only a few librarians knew much more than that there was a Law of War. Short, with long dark hair to her waist and skin the color of aged ivory, Takima often reminded people of a bird, tilting her head in thought. Now she looked like a bird that wanted to take flight, shifting on her seat, adjusting her shawl, unnecessarily straightening her cap of pearls and sapphires. "It is," she said finally, and clamped her mouth shut. Egwene quietly started breathing again. "It seems," Romanda said in a clipped tone, "that Swan Sanche has been teaching you well, Mother. How speak you in support of declaring war? On a woman?" She sounded as if she were trying to push something disagreeable out of her way, and she dropped onto her seat, waiting for it to depart. Egwene nodded graciously anyway and rose. She met the sitters' gazes one by one, levelly, firmly. Takima avoided her eyes. Light, the woman knew. But she had not said anything. Would she hold silent long enough? It was too late to change plans. "Today we find ourselves confronted by an army led by people who doubt us. That army would not be there otherwise." Egwene wanted to put passion into her voice, to let it burst out, but Swan had advised utter coolness, and finally she had agreed. They needed to see a woman in control of herself, not a girl being ridden by her heart. The words came from her heart, though. "You heard Arathel say she did not want to become entangled in Aes Sedai affairs, yet they were willing to bring an army into Murundi and stand in our way, because they are not certain who we are or what we are about. Did any of you feel that they truly believe you are sitters?" Malind, round-faced and fierce-eyed, shifted on her bench among the greens, and so did Salita, twitching her yellow-fringed shawl, though her dark face managed to hide any expression. Birana, another sitter chosen in Salidar, frowned thoughtfully. Egwene did not mention the reaction to her as Amarlin. If that thought was not already in their heads, she did not want to plant it. "We've listed Elida's crimes to countless nobles," she went on. "We've told them we intend to remove her, but they doubt. They think that maybe we are what we say. And maybe there's a trick in our words. Perhaps we are only Elida's hand, weaving some elaborate scheme. Doubt leaves people floundering. Doubt gave Pellavar and Arathel the nerve to stand before Aes Sedai and say, 'You cannot go further.' Who else will stand in our way or interfere because they aren't certain, and uncertainty leads them to act in a cloud of confusion? There's only one way for us to dispel their confusion. We have already done everything else. Once we declare ourselves at war with Elida, there can be no doubts. I don't say that Arathel and Pellavar and Aemlyn will march away as soon as we do so, but they and everyone else will know who we are. No one will dare again to show doubt so openly when you say you are the Hall of the Tower. No one will dare stand in our way, meddling in the affairs of the Tower through uncertainty and ignorance. We have walked to the door and put our hands on the latch. If you are afraid to walk through, then you all but ask the world to believe that you are nothing but Elida's puppets." She sat, surprised at how calm she felt. Beyond the two rows of sitters, sisters outside stirred, putting their heads together. She could imagine the excited murmurs that Aeldrin's ward blocked off. Now if only Takima kept her mouth shut long enough. Romanda grunted impatiently and stood only long enough to say, "Who stands for declaring war against Elida?" Her gaze returned to Lelaine, and her cold, smug smile returned. It was clear what she considered important once this nonsense was done with. Janya rose immediately, the long brown fringe on her shawl swaying. "We might as well," she said. She was not supposed to speak, but her set jaw and sharp gaze dared anyone to call her down. She was not normally so forceful, but as usual her words nearly tripped over one another. "Mending what the world knows won't be any harder than it is for this. Well, I don't see the point of waiting." On the other side of Takima, Esmeralda nodded and stood. Moria all but bounded to her feet, frowning down at Lirella, who gathered her skirts as if to rise, then hesitated and looked at Lelaine questioningly. Lelaine was too busy frowning across the carpets at Romanda to notice. Among the greens, Samalin and Malin stood together, and Faisella looked up with a jerk. A stocky, copper-skinned Domani, Faisella was not a woman startled by much, but she looked startled now, her square face swinging wide-eyed from Somalin to Malind and back. Salita rose, carefully adjusting the yellow fringe of her shawl, and just as carefully avoiding Romanda's sudden frown. Quamesa stood, and then Aeldrin, drawing Birana up by her sleeve. Delana twisted completely around on her bench, peering at the sisters outside. Even in silence, the spectators' excitement communicated itself in constant shifting, heads going together, eyes darting toward the sitters. Delana rose slowly, both hands pressed to her middle, looking ready to sick up on the spot. Takima grimaced and stared at her hands on her knees. Soroya studied the other two white sitters, tugging at her ear the way she did when deep in thought. But no one else moved to stand. Egwene felt bile rising in her own throat. 10. Just 10. She had been so sure. Swan had been so sure. Loghain alone should have been enough, given their ignorance of the law involved. Pelivar's army and Arathel refusing to admit that they were sitters should have primed them like a pump. "For the love of the light!" Moria burst out. Rounding on Lirella and Lilaine, she planted her fists on her hips. If Janya's speaking had not gone against custom, this tied it in a knot. Displays of anger were strictly forbidden in the hall, but Moria's eyes blazed, and her Ilianer accent was thick with it. "Why do you wait? Elida did steal the stole and the staff. Elida's Aja did make Loghain a false dragon, and only the light knows how many other men. No woman in the history of the Tower did ever deserve this declaration more. Stand, or hold silent from now about your resolve to remove her." Lilaine did not quite stare, but by her expression you might have thought she had found herself attacked by a sparrow. "This is hardly worth a vote, Moria," she said in a tight voice. "We will speak later about decorum, you and I. Still, if you need a demonstration of resolve..." With a sharp sniff she rose, and gave a jerk of her head that pulled Lirella up to her feet like strings. Lilaine seemed surprised that it did not pull up Faisella and Takima, too. Far from standing, Takima grunted as if struck. Disbelief bright on her face, she ran her eyes along the women on their feet, obviously counting, and then did it again. Takima, who remembered everything the first time. Egwene breathed deep in relief. It was done. She could hardly believe. After a moment, she cleared her throat, and Shiryam actually jumped. Green eyes as big as teacups, the keeper cleared her throat, too. "The lesser consensus standing, war is declared against Elida do Avrine Arroyhan." Her voice was none too steady, but it sufficed. "In the interest of unity, I ask for the greater consensus to stand." Faisella half moved, then clenched her hands in her lap. Soroya opened her mouth, then closed it without speaking, her face troubled. No one else stirred. "You won't get it," Romanda said flatly. The sneer she directed across the pavilion at Lilaine was as good as a statement of why she, at least, would not stand. "Now that little business is finished, we can go on with..." "I don't think we can," Egwene cut in. "Takima, what does the law of war say about the Ammerlin seat?" Romanda was left with her mouth hanging open. Takima's lips writhed. The diminutive brown looked more than ever a bird wishing to take flight. "The law," she began, then took a deep breath and sat up straight. "The law of war states, as one set of hands must guide a sword, so the Ammerlin seat shall direct and prosecute the war by decree. She shall seek the advice of the Hall of the Tower, but the Hall shall carry out her decrees with all possible speed, and for the sake of unity, they shall..." She faltered and had to visibly force herself to go on. "They shall and must approve any decree of the Ammerlin seat regarding prosecution of the war with the greater consensus." A long silence stretched. Every eye seemed to be goggling. Turning abruptly, Delana vomited onto the carpets behind her bench. Quamesa and Salita both climbed down and started toward her, but she waved them off, plucking a scarf from her sleeve to wipe her mouth. Magla and Saroya and several others still seated looked as though they might follow her example. No others who had been chosen in Salidar, though. Romanda appeared ready to bite through a nail. "Very clever," Lilaine said at last in clipped tones, and after a deliberate pause added, "Mother, will you tell us what the great wisdom of your vast experience tells you to do? About the war, I mean. I want to make myself clear." "Let me make myself clear, too," Egwene said coldly. Leaning forward, she fixed the blue sitter sternly. "A certain degree of respect is required toward the Ammerlin seat, and from now on I will have it, daughter. This is no time for me to have to unchair you and name a penance." Lilaine's eyes crept wider and wider with shock. Had the woman really believed everything would continue as before? Or after so long not daring to show more than the tiniest backbone, had Lilaine simply believed she had none? Egwene really did not want to unchair her. The blues would almost certainly return the woman, and she still had to deal with the hall on matters that could not be convincingly disguised as part of the war against Elida. From the corner of her eye she saw a smile pass across Romanda's lips at seeing Lilaine set down. Small profit if all she did was raise Romanda's stock with the others. "That holds for everyone, Romanda," she said. "If need be, Tiana can find two birches as easily as one." Romanda's smile vanished abruptly.
"If I may speak, Mother," Takima said, rising slowly. She attempted a smile, but she still looked decidedly ill. "I myself think you have begun well. There may be benefits to stopping here a month, or longer." Romanda's head jerked around to stare at her, but for once Takima did not appear to notice. "Wintering here, we can avoid worse weather further north, and also plan carefully."
"There's an end to delays, daughter," Egwene cut in. "No more dragging our feet." Would she be another Gera, or another Shine? Either was still possible. "In 1 month, we will travel from here."
No, she was Egwene Alvear, and whatever the secret histories would say of her faults and virtues, the light only knew. But they would be hers, not copies of some other woman's.
"In 1 month, we will begin the siege of Tar Valon." This time the silence was broken only by the sound of Takima weeping.